Hey there, I'm an animated Connor Walsh, which is kind of ironic because people say I'm pretty animated in real life. Anyway, welcome to Walsh Wednesday, my new slash old podcast. Let me explain. Back in high school in 2013, I was pressured by some friends to do an impromptu solo acoustic performance in my cafeteria. Believe it or not, people really took to it. And it turned into a monthly musical series I did through the rest of high school. Who said High School Musical wasn't realistic? By college, I turned Walsh Wednesday into a web series, focusing on interviews surrounding community events, charities, and local entertainment in the Hudson Valley and Capital Regions of New York. Walsh Wednesday spawned several spin-offs such as the Walsh Wednesday Concert Series, Walsh Wednesday Spotlights, and Walsh Wednesday The Reflective Series before its hiatus in 2021. After that, I spent the last 3 years working in radio, honing my craft, conducting unbelievable interviews, traveling to fascinating places, attending mind-blowing events, and meeting some of my personal heroes. Now, with the help of some awesome people I've met along the way, I'm bringing Walsh Wednesday back bigger and better than ever. Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday. On this week's episode, we speak with actor Giancarlo Zanni about the new play he's a part of called Failsafe, which he and his team are gearing up to take overseas to Scotland for the Edinburgh Festival Fringe 2025, the world's largest performance arts festival. Giancarlo and I get into everything from his origins into acting, how he got involved with Failsafe, his time learning under the Stella Adler Studio in New York City, and so much more. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, and Walsh Valuation. Hey there, everybody, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and we got a very special episode for you guys today. This is really special to me as well because it's a little bit of a blast from the past. Giancarlo Zanni is somebody that I've known since we were kids. We played soccer together. Then, you know, as time goes on, we both go our separate ways. And then, funny enough, the arts bring us back together. And I'm proud of all the things that he's doing. This guy's got an incredible story, which we'll be getting into. He's currently crowdfunding and working on Failsafe. It's a dark comedy, and there's a lot of great things to come out of that. Going to be talking about that shortly. And then he's also studying at the Stella Adler Studio of Acting in NYC, which that's going to be interesting because we were speaking with people from the Meisner Studio not that long ago. So I'd be very interested to hear the juxtaposition there. So again, I'll say his name again. We have with us actor, thespian, and great soccer player in his younger years, Giancarlo Zanni. Giancarlo, how are you?
I am doing fantastic, Connor. Thank you for having me on here. This is so awesome. So awesome to be here.
Absolutely. And if I'm not mistaken, since we were texting beforehand, this is your first interview.
This is my first interview.
Yeah.
It goes to you, Connor. You got it.
I promise I'll be gentle. First time. I got you.
Please be gentle.
Which I kind of find interesting, you know, you being involved in the arts and especially in theater and all that. I'm surprised it hasn't come up sooner. But hey, I'm happy to be here, and hopefully this leads to many more. It's like, hey, did you see that Giancarlo guy? He's going, we got to get him on ours. So
that's a hope. I guess that all depends on how I do here. But yeah, I mean, I haven't really been at the whole theater acting arts thing for that long, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I started really doing it in high school, and it was kind of a matter of like, you know, the seniors that left made a big gap in the drama club. We need guys for our upcoming musical. So do you want to join? All your friends are in it. You should do it too. So kind of just pulled into it that way, roped on in. And then the rest is history. Here I am now.
Rest is history. What was that show that roped you in then?
Oh my God. They needed guys for Into the Woods.
Into the Woods. Okay. Good show. Good show. Who were you in it?
I was none other than the other prince.
Oh,
Rapunzel's prince. Yes. Yeah. A alongside one of my best friends who also got roped in. He was Cinderella's prince, and it was just a blast. It was just so much fun, just really hanging out with all your friends after school, just playing pretend, just being on stage, having a good time together, and somehow along the way finding out that I could kind of sing and I could kind of act. But I didn't think about that too much at that time. I was like, this is fun. Yep. I'm having a great time. I'm with my friends.
Yeah.
Telling a story. That's what it's all about.
And it's also funny because, you know, those two princes, you do kind of got to sing for that role. Agony. You know, it's like, you really got to get into that. That's a hammy scene.
Oh, hammy all the way. All the way.
But when you have like your best friend to like, or one of your best friends to like do that alongside, I feel like the chemistry with that must have been fantastic.
I think that's what it was. I think we were just locked into each other, just going into it before, just in the audition. We just kind of had that because we had been friends. God, at that point, I knew him since the second grade. So we're just brothers, essentially, like they are. So it was already there.
Amazing. Amazing. That's very similar to something that, you know, a shared mutual friend of ours, Harrison Mark, when we did Mary Poppins. I was Mr. Banks. He was Bert. We shared only one scene together, but that one scene is like that really pivotal, kind of like the Grinch. Grinch's heart grows three sizes. So does Mr. Banks kind of vibe. Like he revives that child within him. Oh, my God. Just like the chemistry in that scene and just the pin drop energy in the room. Fantastic. But let's talk about that for a second. All the various connections we have. Harrison is one of them. As I mentioned before, we played soccer together. My dad was the coach of the team. I don't even know how many years that we played together, but good amount. Good amount,
yeah,
like through elementary school.
Yeah.
And joking around right before this, how many of his players went into the arts instead of sports, which is ironic.
Yeah.
But then Harrison, you've done a number of shows with, and we'll get into that in a little bit more. But then there's another tie that I really wasn't expecting. Malane Rodkamp, who we just had on again recently. You know, Malane.
Yeah. Malane Rodkamp and her sons, I went to school with. I did Into the Woods with as well. So got roped into to their family a little bit. We would actually go over to their house before rehearsals almost every day after school and like hang out. We would play Super Smash Brothers together, just have a blast, and then go to drama club. It was like the best time ever. It was so great. So yeah, I got to know Malane as well. Yeah.
Oh wow, that's really cool. Shout out to Malane. You said Smash
Shout
Bros. Who's your go-to?
Oh, Roy is my boy. Forever and always.
Really? Okay. Very
yes.
Cool. That's not one that I hear a lot of people typically go towards.
Yeah. Well, since the days of Melee, he wasn't really good then. But when I was a wee little lad and I was playing Melee at my cousin's house, I saw the red hair. I saw the fiery sword and that did it for me. So just Roy Main, loyal to him ever since. And then he finally got really good in the most recent game in Smash Ultimate. He's actually like a decent playable character. So that made me very happy. It finally paid off all those years being invested in that character. So.
Vindicated yes. After all this time. See, I'll admit, I'm a basic bitch here when I say that I go for Kirby a lot. I love Kirby. But
I see that for you. You're wearing the pink shirt.
I am wearing the pink shirt, absolutely. But not just Kirby. By the time Brawl came around, I like Ike. I love playing as Ike. That's a good one too. So
yes.
We'll have to play Smash Bros. Sometime. Like I still
okay,
got
we have to now.
I still got my Wii. I still have my old Wii and everything. I pull it out every
Beautiful.
Once in a while. So next time you're back in town, we ought to do that. But sorry, let's get back into the shows, of course. See, this is what happens when you just get two old friends like reconnecting. This is just the stuff that you're gonna get.
Yeah.
But you said how it was really in high school you got into theater, but even then it was just, hey, I'm hanging out with my friends. This isn't anything I'm taking too seriously. When would you say the point was that it did start getting serious for you?
Yeah. I would say that at some point in my college career, It was maybe going into my junior year. The first 2 years I had gone in, I was like, I don't know exactly what I want to do, but I love video games. I love video games. I love art. I want to maybe try and make those. And I went to Marist College, and they had a new program. It was their Games and Emerging Media program. And I was like, great. I live really close to the college. I can commute, I can save money, and I'll like go and try to figure out how to design games, I guess. Me saying this to myself as an 18-year-old. And just trying to navigate that path. It wasn't working out in the ways that I thought. And like I said, going into my junior year, I was kind of feeling that I needed a switch. And I wasn't doing theater those past 2 years. And I was just remembering back to my senior year, maybe romanticizing it a little bit, that summer of 2016 was like a golden age. And just remembering kind of that feeling and what that was like to make stories and to be in them and to do that alongside your friends and people that you come to know really well when you do theater, because that's kind of just what happens. You get to know people really, really well. And I figured that maybe it was time to step back into it. So Marist had they had a theater minor that I picked up and accumulated into my schedule. And I made a little bit of a degree switch. I went to just the more communications route. And I was just really heavily active at their theater club at Marist, which is the oldest club on the campus. The Marist Theater Guild used to be called. And it just kind of stoked that flame within me again. I loved learning about acting. It was just so fascinating to me. And it felt really satisfying and really kind of fulfilling in a way. Like, I've said this to some other professors and some other teachers that I've had along the way in my acting journey, when they've taught like the acting techniques of like Stanislavski, and more recently for me of Stella Adler. I've just felt like I'm being handed the keys to figure out what human life is like and how to live in a
The keys
way.
of the kingdom, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, wow, this is all out there. It's all like right before me, and you're just giving it all to me. You're telling me how to live, how to be a human. It's like, it's strange when I say it like that, but it's true in a sense. It's acting, it's being a human, how we are, how we do what we do. And it's just fascinating.
I totally agree with that. There's something about being able to perform and to be able to connect with the crowd, and then also find something within yourself as well. Whether it's for me when I'm doing a set, playing original music or cover songs, or whether it is being in a play. So I totally feel you on that. And a lot of my college experiences doing shows were phenomenal as well, and it really kind of grounded me during that time, and it led to a lot of the connections and. Funny enough, somehow, some way led me to my girlfriend today of nearly 3 years. So
Wow.
that's a long story. I'll have to tell you afterwards, but it's a crazy domino effect how that happened. But that's really, really cool. And then here you are, you're at Marist, you're doing all that. And unfortunately, then the pandemic comes along. 2020, that was when you were graduating, right? That was your last year?
Yeah,
Yeah.
it was. Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. It's the semester before the fall of 2019, my senior year, I had went abroad. To London
Oh,
to kind of
wow.
yeah to study theater there, and that was an amazing experience, getting exposed to the theater scene over there and learning about it, and taking a little bit of acting classes over there, and then come back in the spring ready to take my knowledge forward again and do the spring productions. And we thankfully were able to we were able to put on
Oh,
our production of
lucky.
Chicago. And then, like a few weeks later, we went on spring break, never went back.
Wow. Funny enough, the show that we were supposed to do our opening weekend was the week that we were told to get the hell out. Yeah, so we never got to do our show, which is strangely ironic. Have you ever heard of the play or the musical, The Mystery of Edwin Drood?
I have not actually, no.
So it's oh shoot, I'm going to screw this up. No, it is Charles Dickens. It was Charles Dickens' last work, but it was unfinished. So one of the things about it is that it has multiple endings to kind of be like, which way was Charles Dickens really going to go with this?
Very
So when you
cool.
do the play, there's multiple different endings. It's unfinished and you don't know where it's going to go. And just like the play itself, it went unfinished for us.
Oh man, too
Yeah.
real, too real.
It was way too real. It was, and I even remember telling people back in February, it's like, we're doing such a good job with this, but like, for some reason, I can't see us putting this on. I don't know
Oh
why.
no.
And then when that all happened, they look at me, it was like, Connor, it was you. Like, you did this. Like, I guess so. So obviously the pandemic, it was a bit of a dry spell. Not a heck of a lot was going on. But funny enough, you and I got back into performing around the same time, doing a lot of similar things. The way that we reconnected was on the set of Pretty Little Liars. What was that like for you being a part of that TV show?
Oh my God. First off, just any production, any like film, television production of that caliber that is able to like actually come together and do what they set out to do, which is film the show. It's a miracle. It is a miracle that any of that, all those moving pieces come together at all. It's insane. I'd say that having done background, I say that also having worked as a PA on a set before. My first job kind of out of COVID was on the set of White House Plumbers, which also
Oh, great
shot,
show too. All around here, right around
all
here.
around in the Hudson Valley.
Yep.
And that was a 5 month shoot, I believe. Limited series, 5 episode, hour long each. And just seeing how everything has to happen by a certain deadline over the course of a day, there's only so many hours in a day to get stuff done. It's just incredible how anything is able to happen. And I got to see a lot of stuff from the PA end of things. And by the end of that 5 months, I was like, this is really cool. I've learned a lot, but I just still have this itch to be on the other side, to be in front of the camera. And that's what prompted me to kind of go and dive back into acting again and to seek out background acting, because I was working on the HBO set, so I was getting a lot of wind of other stuff, other projects that were happening. And I eventually came across Pretty Little Liars, and they needed a bunch of young folk to be some high schoolers. So I was like, hey,
Yep.
I got you. And then I happened to stumble across you, and that was amazing.
It
It's
was so
like, this is
funny.
so strange.
It was so funny because I remember, like, I think my dad worked with your mom fairly around that time, like recent, and they were both talking, catching up, and saying how it's like, oh, my son's doing Pretty Little Liars. Oh, my son's doing Pretty Little Liars. So I kind of had an idea. It's like, oh, maybe I'll see you. Maybe, just maybe. But then I think you were just chilling on one of the bleachers as we're waiting for scenes. And I'm like, yo, Giancarlo? And it was just kind of so random. And it was like, there we go. There we go.
Yeah, that's all it took. It was just right time, right place, because not everybody is called on all the days and everything. So we just happen to
Exactly.
be there at the same time. And as you know, there tends to be a lot of downtime as a background actor.
Yeah.
So we were really able to meet up again and be like, this is a little serendipitous, isn't it? From
Right.
soccer to acting, here we both are.
Yeah. No, it's funny. And one thing about that downtime, you became a very popular person if you brought a deck of cards. Like, you could be like the nerdiest or the most introverted or the most repulsive person. But if you had a deck of cards with you, you'd have like the hottest girls surrounding you because they needed to do something.
That is the secret that they don't tell you.
Yeah. And I can say that because I was single at the time. It was like, sorry, Alex. Nothing happened, babe. We're good.
It's
Yep.
okay.
It
I
was
was
well
there. I
before
can
you.
account for it.
But it was such a fun time. And as you said, it's a long shoot. Not everybody's called for every single day. And it was crazy because I think by that time I was like 2 months in to the project by the time like we actually ran into each other. Like, where was that for you during that time period? Do you remember?
Oh gosh. I am trying to remember. Some of that time period does like meld into itself. I just remember going to their sound stage, which was in
Oh,
it's on
what
the tip of my tongue.
is that
It's
technically Saugerties? Where was that?
Saugerties, thank you. Yes.
Was it Saugerties? It was at least close by if
Yes.
it wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
it was in Saugerties, the studio that they were using. And I went there for a bunch of shoots. And then where we were at some closed down high school
Yes. Yep.
in like out in farmland in upstate New York. Took
Yep.
me and you, because we live pretty close together.
Yeah.
Takes you like an hour to get there, at least driving. So, and some of those calls were super early in the
Super
morning.
early. Yeah.
You wake up, it's still dark out, and you got to drive for an hour in the cold because this was also during the winter.
Yep. How many outdoor scenes we had to do though? I remember doing a scene out in the woods. And we had to pretend like it was still like homecoming time of the fall. So, like, we're not wearing much. And I'm just like, for God's sakes, give me a jacket, please.
Yep, I remember some of that. There was one scene where thankfully they had this huge bonfire going on. So that was actually nice and helpful because it was
Yep.
at night, it was a night shoot, and there was just like kids at some party with a big bonfire that they had to keep going. So it was like a gas-powered bonfire. So it was really hot. And that was like the only time I was warm outside. Every other time I was like freezing my ass off. I was
Yep.
in football gear for one scene, which was horrible, but
Really? I was in one of the football scenes too, and I had a blast, honestly. I will say this though about the football scene that we did. We actually, I don't know if you had the same kind of treatment, but we actually had a real football coach come in and teach us drills and everything. And we spent the whole morning learning all these drills that we were going to have to do on camera. And then by the time we did start filming, we barely finished one drill. So we did all that stuff for nothing.
It's crazy to say that. Like, again, we must have just been called for different days, because I
Yeah.
did a very similar thing. We had the coach. We like it seemed a bit more casual. I don't think we went as intense as it sounds like you did. We
You
just had some
probably did after because they realized that they ain't doing as
that
much stuff as they thought.
must be it. Yeah, the coach was there. I think we just had a couple of other guys that had actually played football before, and they were kind of able to lead a couple of drills. And I was like, wait, so I'm out here, it's freezing cold, I'm in football gear, which I've never played football besides then, really. So I've never like been in, it wasn't even full football gear, but it was enough
Yeah.
to tell me like, wow, okay, football, footballers, I give you a little respect.
Yeah, I
Playing
had lacrosse
football,
gear.
crazy.
It wasn't even football gear.
Oh,
It
okay.
was lacrosse pads, which was very homey for me because I played lacrosse back in high school. So it was like, oh, this feels natural. And then we just put the jersey on and the helmet. It's like, okay, slightly different, but it felt
Yeah,
right.
opposite for me. The most
Yeah.
unnatural thing. I don't know how people play so well in all that gear. It
Yeah.
limits like everything that you can do, movement-wise, vision-wise. It's crazy.
Yeah. Gives you a lot of respect, right?
It does. It does. My respect did deepen on
Yeah.
that day.
Absolutely. Now, there were some crazy times on that set, doing the football scenes. There was a deer carcass that was in the middle of the field that they had to send a PA to scoop up. So I'm
That
glad you
poor
weren't a
PA.
PA for that then.
My love to all PAs out there,
Yes.
truly. I
Yes.
understand your pain.
Yep. No, I felt bad for them. So, what were we called? Like Timberwolves or werewolves or something? I don't know. However, we after that day, anytime the football crew got together, at least the ones that were there that day, we called ourselves the deer carcasses. So it'd be like,
Oh my God.
one, two, three, deer carcass.
I
Yep. So.
love it. I love it. And that's the kind of bonding that happens on these sets, theater, film, and television. You just have to go through like some of the craziest stuff, and it bonds you. It can't not, in a way. It's
Right.
traumatic or not.
Trauma bonding. It's the
Trauma
best.
bonding.
But we also actually did kind of trauma bond a little bit because it was majority of the people's first shows or first anything of entertainment after the pandemic, which also leads
Yes.
me to another thing that you did after the pandemic. We talked about this. Funny enough, Harrison Mark talked about this recently too, the show 12th Night at the Center for Performing Arts at Rhinebeck. That was like the moment that he realized, I have to do this forever. And we were talking before we got on the mic as we were setting this up. You said that that was a very pivotal show for you as well. Do you want to go into that?
Yeah, I'd love to. I love talking about that show. I love thinking about that show. It brings me such back to such a nice time. 'Cause that was my first theater show out of the pandemic. I had been doing the background stuff, but first time back on a stage was with 12th Night at the Center. And I knew about the Center. I hadn't seen too much there beforehand. But I just saw it as an opportunity. And I, again, was starting to really get my actor gears in motion. And I was like, okay, if I'm going to do the acting thing, well, I need to act. I need to be on a stage. I need to be doing it in a way that, you know, gives me a little more meat to chew on, as opposed to like background where, you know, you're told where to be and you don't essentially have lines that you got to memorize or, and do all that character work and stuff. So I was like, I need that. I need to chew on that stuff. And Shakespeare seems like the place to dive into that.
That's such a jump, though. That's
It
such a
is such a
jump.
jump now that I say it out loud. Again, really going into the deep end with the acting stuff. And I won't lie, you know, it scared me. Shakespeare is very intimidating to new actors. But regardless, I just knew it was something that I had to do. And by that point in time, yes, I had already auditioned for Stella Adler for their conservatory program. And I prepared a monologue from Measure for Measure. And one of my best friends, the playwright of Failsafe, actually, Phil Carroll, he helped me a lot with picking apart the monologue and actioning it and doing all the actory stuff to it that made it come to life. And just doing that sort of stuff was just so fascinating. And it was so much fun. Shakespeare can be fun, everybody. It can be
No,
so
he
much fun.
absolutely can. Hell, I've done Romeo and Juliet, so it was like I feel you. I've done it. I've been there. May not be as fun for me to read, but actually acting it out was a really, really impressive experience. Yeah, so I feel you.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, so just bringing what little bit I had worked on with Shakespeare through Angelo and Measure for Measure into Rhinebeck, I felt like that set me up pretty well, apparently, because I got cast as the Duke Orsino in Twelfth Night. And it was just such a lovely time with all those people. All those actors are so amazing, so incredible. They all brought so much life. To their characters and to that show. And it was so refreshing to do that kind of a show, that comedy,
Yeah.
with all of its antics and gender swapping and all of its love that it pours out. It was just such a good time. I even now, like talking about it, I'm like romanticizing it because that's how it like lives in me now. It's so wonderful.
It really helped set you on a path like that, help catch kept you going. I'm the ad ref, calling a timeout on this week's episode to tell you about our sponsors.
Baseball has umps, you idiot.
I don't have an umpire outfit, okay? Sue me. Hey there, I'm the ad ref, calling a timeout on this week's episode to tell you about our sponsors. Next up to the plate, we have our friend Philomena Finelli from Impact PR and Communications. Philomena?
Thanks, Connor. I'm Philomena Finelli, CEO of Impact PR and Communications and a media maven, which is a fancy way of saying that my team and I help companies get in the news, transform leaders into thought leaders, and cut through the clutter with messaging that matters. And we do it all with a smile. Our agency was named the Woman-Owned Small Business of the Year for 2024 by the Metro New York District Office of the U.S. Small Business Administration, and we received the Gold Stevie Award for Women-Run Workplace of the Year, which is an international recognition. But it's not about the awards, it's about the personal interactions. We at Impact PR and Communications pride ourselves on crafting meaningful, results-driven public relations campaigns that are tailored to meet and exceed our clients' goals. If you want to learn more and talk to my team and I, visit PRwithimpact.com and let us know that you found out about us from Walsh Wednesday.
Thanks, Philomena. Before I hand it back over to the ad ref, I want to let you know about a special performance I have coming up. On Father's Day, Sunday, June 15th, I'll be doing a special solo acoustic Father's Day performance at Heritage Financial Park, home of the Hudson Valley Renegades. I'll be performing from 12:30 to 2 o'clock ahead of the game, Hudson Valley Renegades versus Greenville Drive. You can find information in the description of this episode. That's enough out of me. Play ball! This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Dayrock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, and Walsh Valuation.
Giancarlo, one second. Hold on. Actually, this might be fun for you. Hold on. Here, Coach Walsh, come and say hi.
Hello, Giancarlo. How are you?
Hey, Coach Walsh. Long time no see. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I run into your mom every once in a while, and we talk about how great our sons are.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I'm absolutely, like, after we're done here, I think I'm going to give her a call.
Good.
Give her a call. Say hi, Mom. I love you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. So good to see you.
Yes, I still have such fond memories of you guys out on the field. You guys gave me so much fun.
Yeah. We talked about our soccer days.
Yeah, absolute same. I think being on your team, playing with Connor, I think that was probably the most fun I had playing soccer.
Hell yeah.
Honestly. Yeah.
It was just
very
so
good.
Yeah.
I'll let you guys go, but good seeing you.
Yeah,
and
good seeing you too.
Continue good luck on the acting stage.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Really appreciate that.
That's exciting.
Very exciting indeed.
All right. Bye.
I'll help you out with the ink in a little bit. Terry Walsh, everybody.
Terry Walsh. Legend. Living legend.
Yep. As he said, you were also doing this stuff for the Stella Adler studio at the same time. And I think that's a really good segue into talking about that. That's where you are right now. You're in your apartment in New York City, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So that's so cool that you're working a part of that studio. And I think it's really interesting because we had some people who studied the Meisner method and teach the Meisner method. It was, I always screw up the acronym if I'm not reading it. The Academy for Film, Television, and Performing Arts. I might have forgotten one thing. I love them. David and Nan Wilson, great people. Long acronym, though, so I apologize if I butchered it. But they're fantastic. And David Wilson, he, you know, studied under Meisner, and talking about that and how the Meisner method is a lot more reactionary and in the moment. And it's very much you're in the moment and that's what you got. You got to give the authentic. It's like, what kind of responses would you give in that moment? The Adler method, from what I'm aware of, really, really dives into the character development and kind of really dissects it. I might be wrong, so I would love to hear it from somebody who is currently doing it right now, especially because Meisner and Adler come from, you know, if you have like a big tree, kind of like a spider web or whatever, they come from the same areas, but just kind of diverged.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely right. You know, it all comes back to Stanislavski.
Yes.
Adler and Meisner and Strasberg as one of the other roots of that tree. You know, they all came from the group theater and eventually kind of devised their own methods for how to go about learning acting and teaching acting in the 20th century. For Adler, I'll give you the mantra that really attracted me when I was trying to figure out where to get my acting training. And that mantra is growth as an actor and growth as a human being are synonymous. So really considering the human behind the character and underneath the character that informs the character, the truth that has to live through the character. And another one of the big differences I suppose that Stella has from like Meisner and Strasberg is really using the imagination as a tool to step into character and figure out what that life is of the human under it. Because we see characters at a certain point in their lives, at a certain period of time, where a lot of stuff has happened to them to make them who they are. And then our job as the actor, in a way, is to reverse engineer. You know, when you act, when you get cast in something, you're handed the script, you're handed the words. That's the final thing that happens. The words are the last thing that happen. There's a lot of stuff that has to happen before all those words are said. You know, the chosen words are chosen for a reason because of the circumstances, because of what that character is experiencing, what they have experienced all throughout their life. So as the actor, it's up to us to determine what that is. And that's not always necessarily given to you in the script. A lot is given to you in the script. You can figure out a lot from what the playwright gives you. And it's amazing what they do give you by reading over and over and over again your script and your lines. But what exists outside of the script, off of the page, falls to us. And it's our responsibility to tap into that truth of that life so that it can become realized, so that it can be full. And I suppose that's essentially a lot of what I've learned at Stella these past couple of years, is to find the truth of these humans, of these characters, and tell it in the moment.
This sounds like definitely the right route for you, especially what you were saying before of how your experience in early theater really taught you to be a human yourself, and it's like really experience things on a deeper level that you didn't realize that you could. So now the fact that this is the route that you've taken, it obviously I'm hearing about this backwards, you know, we're looking at this retroactively, but it seems like this was the path, this was the direction, and this seems like the best way for you to unearth those characters. And I think that's great. And now, after all this, we've been talking, hinting about Failsafe. I think it's finally time to really get into it, because I think it's good to have that understanding of where you're coming from in your experiences and as an actor to talk about this, because this is a pretty heavy-duty show here. You guys are crowdfunding for Failsafe. It's a dark comedy, and you guys are trying to raise money for the Edinburgh Fringe 2025 Festival. So let's get into all of it. What is Failsafe? What is Edinburgh? How'd you get involved with this? Let's talk about the story now.
Yeah, let's dive into it. Oh boy. So I brought up his name briefly before, Phil Carroll, the playwright of Failsafe and one of my best friends that I met in high school. And we also did Into the Woods together.
It all goes back to Into the Woods for you. I love it.
It all comes back. Stephen Sondheim. And yeah, so we've been really good friends for a while. He's been in New York City for quite some time now, and he's naturally a creative of his own, and has stepped more into the playwright shoes and devised this little play over the course of a couple of years. To my understanding, I was brought onto the project at the point that they were ready to at least make it a reading to start showing it to other people. And at that point in time, I think they had been working on it for, I think, a little bit over a year. I say Phil Carroll, playwright, my co-star actress, the incomparable Gracie Toon, who plays Ivy in the show. And then our lovely director, Lily Goldman, they were all thinking about this project and decided to have a casting call for the other role of Jones. And Phil reached out to me. He was like, hey, you should submit for this. I would really like to see you. Yeah. And I was like, buddy, I'll do anything for you, of course. And long story short, they ended up casting me. Gracie and I's dynamic seemed to work really well for them. So they brought me onto the project. It was really interesting. It was definitely probably the most different project I've worked on up to that point in time, because it was still in a way being developed. So I was given a lot of agency over the development of my character, which as an actor isn't necessarily the case a lot of the time. You know, you kind of have to fit into the frame that is set for you when you get cast in a role. But with this, it seemed as though I was given a lot of, like I said, agency to craft that frame. And it was super interesting. I hadn't really done anything like that before. And it was just a lovely experience to be able to collaborate on a story, on a character in that way with them. Mm. So we were able to do that. We worked on it for a while, and then we got it up to a reading, which we had at Maggie Flanagan Studios in New York City.
Sweet.
And a bunch of people came out and supported us. And it was then that somebody from The Tank, also in New York City, decided to pick it up for a limited run in December, which was like amazing. It was like, oh my God, our dreams are being realized in real time.
And that's pretty impressive.
It was amazing. It was like, wow, the chips are falling and I like where they're falling. So we had our run at The Tank in December. And from that point in time, the reading was in April of last year. And then from that point to December, the show had changed a lot. There were a lot of rewrites. You know, it was still in its like kind of developmental phase. Things were being honed, characters were being honed in on. And it ended up being a pretty different show when it realized at The Tank. Yeah. Just, I would say harder, deeper, faster into the things that it sets out to be.
Yeah.
And I'm talking a lot about it and around the show. The show itself is it's a dark comedy. It's about two characters, Ivy and Jones, who are kind of friends, but they form this suicide pact together. Mm-hmm. They agree to form a suicide pact together because Ivy doesn't want to die alone and Jones doesn't want to die a virgin. So they're able to form this kind of friends with benefits suicide pact to realize their goals together. And the play explores the both of them trying to fulfill that pact, but the universe has other plans for them and they don't exactly they're not exactly successful in doing that. By the time the play opens and people see the characters, I believe they're on their fourth attempt, their fourth failed attempt.
Wow. Yeah. So this isn't like from the very beginning. It's like you're kind of learning. They're in the midst of everything. Wow.
They're
that's
deep
something.
In it.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's impressive. And I think for a dark comedy, of course, and this is a very serious and sensitive topic. You know, I've had a number of friends and family who have passed away from suicide. Mm-hmm. I have my own struggles with mental health, and I've been very candid about that on this show and previous shows that I've hosted. So being able to attack something like this, and especially add some kind of level to comedy to it. What was it that John Burton said? One of our previous guests, John Burton, who spoke very candidly about his mental health along with his shows and his music, saying, like, if you can't poke fun at it, if you can't speak about it, you're giving it too much power and too much agency. So when you can actually kind of come at it and poke a little fun, have some light with it, but also address it at the same time, that's when you take a lot of the power back. I'm just curious where you and the people you're working with are coming from in your experiences to be able to handle such a serious topic.
Yeah. It definitely requires a certain amount of care and grace around, you know, those very sensitive, very often touchy topics. Yeah. And in a way, I think that's part of it. You know, we're looking to expose these things that might be deemed as touchy.
Yeah.
Because they, in a way, they need to be talked about. They need to be exposed to people that are maybe not as aware of what some people are going through. And in terms of the play and these two characters' drive to end their lives, it can be very, what's the word? Provoking, I suppose.
Mm.
You know, my poor mother.
Oh no.
my mother just wants the best for me, Connor. And as any mother would. And of course, she's been so supportive and lovely in my artistic endeavors. And she came to see this show, and you know, it was just difficult for my mother to see and process me doing all of those things that the play sets out to do, and you know, actively show depictions of suicide, and suicidal attempts. Yeah. You know, but in a way, you know, this feeling that we get from seeing that and seeing other people do it in this theatrical sense, we hope that it's, first off, it disgusts you in a way that these people are actively trying to do this with mm-hmm. all their might. And on the other side of that, we hope that it's a bit cathartic.
Yeah.
To see these people in all of their messy humanness and be like, wow, thank God that isn't me. Thank God. Because that's a lot. That's crazy. And rightfully so. But we just didn't want to shy away from this facet of humanity. You know, people go through really intense times in their lives. They deal with mental health in ways that are not very successful a lot of the time. And it's important to realize, I think, that that is just as much a part of being a human and living life as all the happier parts of living are as well. It's all one side of the same coin. You know, we can't exactly have the joy and happy in our lives without realizing that there is the opposite. You know, we have hope and we have despair, and we all live through it.
Yeah.
And trying to just ignore it or to just cast it aside because we have this idea that it is inherently negative, that we should seek to be rid of it at all costs, I think is doing ourselves a disservice.
Yeah.
As humans. And I think it's important that we elucidate this part of humanity.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think that was very beautifully well said. I want to add like a third thing to what you said. You said the level of the disgust, whereas like there should be a level of that based on the topic, a level of thank God this isn't me, or thank God this isn't like the environment I'm around. But I think the third level to it, that it would be speaking to a lot of people, are the people who are looking at this and it's like, holy crap, this is me. You know, and the people, whether not saying they have a suicide pact, but the people who see the things on stage is like, these are the things I think about all the time. I may not be acting out on this, but I'm thinking this. This is like the vile stuff that's going through my head. I know in the times that I've seen theater or movies or even just simply heard a song that connects on that level, it's almost like a wake up call. It's almost like, oh my God, I'm not as alone as I thought I was. And even in a show that is depicting all this, and in a show that is as deep with all this, I feel, and even just you talking through it, I feel a number of people can be like, holy crap, there's hope for me. And I think that's something that you're going to get out of this as well. And I think this is really important to get out there. And speaking about getting it out there, you guys are trying to, you already been in Europe. You're trying to get back to Europe for the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Tell us about the festival and tell us what you're hoping to accomplish with this.
Yeah. So after our little run at the tank in December, we got back together as a group and we were like, okay, we did it. We put up this show. What is next? How about the Edinburgh Fringe Festival? The biggest theater festival in the world.
Again, another big jump. There's a lot of jumps in this episode.
If there's one thing that I think has been true for me these past couple of years, Connor, is that I keep finding myself to be running towards things that scare the crap out of me.
Good.
I am afraid, and I know I'm afraid, but I think that also tells me that I'm doing the right thing.
Yes.
So, yeah, we're like, okay, let's get a little bit of a break after our little run and start thinking about this a little bit more seriously if this is what we want to do. And just that's what ended up happening. We just kept coming back to it and just came to the point where we thought that was what we needed to do. That's just what we needed to do. We were compelled, we were convinced, whatever. We thought that we needed to bring it to the festival. We wanted more people to see it. And this time on an international stage. So great to have that thought. Great to conceptually be like, yeah, let's have more people see this. And at the festival, it's going to be great. Okay, cool. How do we do that? Well, turns out you need a lot of money. The Fringe is very much a self-funded thing, or tends to be for a lot of performing artists that that perform at the Fringe. And, you know, our case is no different. So just being able to live in Edinburgh for the month of August would be a substantial cost. We would have to rent a venue, which is a cost as well. And in our case, since none of us had previous experience with the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, we figured it would be a really good idea and good move for us to hire a producing company that is well acquainted with how the process goes and that can kind of help guide us through it. So we were able to find a company that we're working with called Rhymes with Purple. They're based in Scotland, so they're already there.
Perfect. And
they're a lovely bunch, and they've been helping us with a lot of the logistical ends of things. And they seem to help a lot of international productions come on over and make that dream a reality for them. So they've been wonderful in this journey so far. They've really helped a lot. And all said and done, we are making strides towards being able to be at the festival. At this point in time, I think we are nearly funded. We are upwards of like 98-99% of the way there, and that is mind-blowing to me.
Yes.
To put a figure out there, we needed to raise around $20,000 to $22,000. It's a lot of money to ask for, especially for, you know, some budding career artists, you know. Yeah. Like, hey, everybody, we did this thing. Please believe in us. please believe in us. It's tough to ask for. Like, please. And it's just been insane, the outpour of support that we've had for our show. It really blows my mind. And I'm so grateful to every and anybody that has donated anything to our little show. We still have a few months left before we really work on getting ourselves over there. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping to get to fulfill a couple contingency items, because we have to pay for things in British pounds. Mm-hmm. And the US dollar isn't doing the best at the moment. So the conversion rate.
Yeah.
We don't have to go into that, but
no.
But just a couple more items for us to help reach that ultimate goal. And once we do, because we're almost there, anything beyond that makes our show stronger.
Yeah.
We're able to satisfy the requirements of being at the festival, housing, venue, producing company. And then anything beyond that goes to promoting our show, being able to advertise for it more around the festival, you know, being able to have more flyers around, being able to maybe have merchandise, which would be so amazing. Oh my God. I want to have merchandise like you, Connor. I want to have a shirt with my face on it and a mug. Yeah.
Go to the Walsh Wednesday merch store. No, thank you. But no, that I think that would be fantastic. And of course, where can people go to put you over the top? Because come on, Walsh Wednesday listening audience, let's put them over the top here. Where can they go to support?
Yeah. So you can visit us on our Fractured Atlas donation page. Fractured Atlas is a nonprofit 501(c) company that allows your donation to be tax deductible. And it's a platform designed specifically for artists. So we really love the collaboration going on there. I'm sure we'll link everything down below.
Links,
well, wherever
links and information in the description of this episode.
There we go. Yep.
We got it all together. Nope. You sent me everything already. So yes, I have it all together.
Love to hear it.
Yes. No, we got it. No. So that's terrific to be able to see all of this coming together. You know, we're getting towards the end of this episode now. We've got into a lot of different things, but one thing that seems to be streamlined through this episode is that whole thing about being human and to be authentic and that level of connection. So here you are and the things that you've been able to do. And when you look at it, it is a relatively short period of time. We're looking at, like, you know, let's say since the pandemic, 5 years. 5 years may feel like forever, especially pandemic 5 years. Holy cow. But, you know, it's impressive what you've been able to do. So what do you say about your journey, about the growth in your career? And what do you say to anybody who might be listening right now, hoping to be on a similar journey?
Wow. Yeah. You put it very well. 5 years is both a long and a short amount of time. You know, when I was really starting to have the thought, the seed of thought in my mind of, okay, maybe acting is the direction I'm wanting to head in, I just knew that I needed to start. I just needed to do something. And, you know, what that ended up being for me was, you know, background acting and then a community theater production. And then eventually I took an online workshop with Stella Adler. And then that inspired me to keep moving that ball forward and auditioning for the studio program. And it just started with me feeling like I needed to do something. Mm. And maybe that was born out of the pandemic of a lot of time to just sit and not do too much and to think a lot. But I just felt like I needed to do. And acting is doing. So, yeah, I think you just have to start somewhere. And that oftentimes can be terrifying. Like I said, I've been facing a lot of fear in my life, I think, over these past 5 years. And, you know, trying to decide what it was that I wanted to do with my life and feeling like I needed to make the perfect choice and not necessarily knowing what that perfect choice is because spoiler alert, kids, perfection is a myth.
It is. It's true. It is true.
So just being able to face that and being able to have, you know, the support of friends and family as well really helped push me into that fear. And, you know, back then I saw that fear as something I needed to overcome. If I did the thing I was scared of, then I would learn more about it and I wouldn't be as scared of it anymore. But also, spoiler alert, things are always kind of scary because you always run into new things. So this point in time, I've been able to learn, I think, a lot of how to live alongside that, as it is a facet of being a human, how we deal with what the world throws at us and how we can keep moving forwards. And it all starts with just doing something, just diving in.
That's fantastic. The overall theme of this, do something, be human. I love it. Giancarlo, this has been fantastic. And of course, make sure that you check out the crowdfunding for Failsafe, the dark comedy. Make sure that they get to Fringe. They're this close. Let's put them over the edge so you can give them that extra bit of sponsoring or their own merch like Welsh Wednesday or whatever it might be. Make it cushier and a little more comfy for them as they step into the fear to make this happen. It's a great show. I'm excited for it. I'm excited for everything that you learn at the studio. And dude, it's just so good to reconnect. Giancarlo, it's been a pleasure.
It has been an absolute pleasure, Connor. This has been so needed. I love this.
Fantastic. And it's time for that sign off now. You good for it? So your name and spend some time.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Got it. Let me. All right.
I'm Connor.
I'm Giancarlo.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, Impact PR and Communications, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County, Locks That Rock Hair Design, Walsh Valuation, and Day Rock. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. You can support this channel by becoming a Patreon member with memberships as low as $5 a month. With that, you can get behind-the-scenes content, your name featured in the credits of each episode, and access to the Spend Some Time chat. You can find that and more by scanning the QR code on your screen or by going to the links in the description. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and I'm glad we get to spend some time.